outline laying around. I encourage you to follow along. I discovered after I had run the outlines off that my copier needed a little toner, so probably half of you are going to have a hard-to-read version. We're in the book of 1 Corinthians. We're finishing chapter 7 today. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is probably the lengthiest passage in the New Testament or in the Bible in regards to marriage, divorce, remarriage, singleness, all of those related issues there. And we've looked at it for 3 weeks. This will be the fourth week as we finish that chapter. And this morning I want to go back and we're going to read the entire chapter one more time. Now we're going to be focused in on the verses 25 through 40, but also read the whole chapter again. And I want to remind you, I guess, of a little backdrop to the chapter before we begin. One thing that you can see hints of in this chapter is that, and not in just this chapter, not in just this book, but in several New Testament books, is that it seems like the apostles, the authors of New Testament books, anticipated that Christ was coming back soon. It reads like in various places in the New Testament that the New Testament writers expected that Jesus would come again, perhaps even in their lifetime. It seems to be implied. They expected that. So keep that in mind as we read through the text, seems to be what Paul's expectations are as he writes. The second thing to remember is that the Christian church in Corinth, and not just in Corinth, but across Greece and all that area in there, Asia Minor, is increasingly facing hostility that are directed toward Christians. Paul has experienced hostilities. Paul has experienced persecution, and the churches have experienced that, and they are beginning to experience it more and more. It's only about 10 years from the writing of this book, as I understand it, that Nero and some of the more violent, hostile Roman emperors will reign. So the worst of the persecution is very near, and they are already beginning to feel that. And so Paul writes the book of 1 Corinthians. He gives advice on marriage and singleness in light of the fact that persecution, if it is not already present in their midst, is just right around the corner. Keep that in mind as we read the chapter. A couple of other things to keep in mind. You'll see throughout the chapter where Paul says things like, "I, Paul, say this, not the Lord." Or he says, "This is not me, but the Lord commands." And so Paul makes a distinction between the commands that Jesus gave concerning divorce and remarriage and Paul's own, I don't know what word to use. I don't want to use advice because that sounds like you can take it or leave it. But Paul's own thoughts. And I don't really know how to draw the line between the commands of Jesus and Paul's advice. But he does make that distinction. The last thing is that the Christian church has a tendency to want to make do's and don'ts lists. And that tendency is found in the area, in the subject of divorce and and remarriage as well. Some want to say there are this issue and this issue and this issue that justifies a divorce. Some want to say, yes, that's the case, but there's never justification for remarriage. Some want to say, yes, in this case, in this case, in this case, there's justification for remarriage. Some want to make a list of three things that justify divorce. Some want to make a list of four things, or two things, or one thing, or whatever the case may be. I have learned on some subjects a long time ago, and some I'll probably learn next year, that my lists are subject to be changed. And I have talked to enough people who have had marital problems to know that it's never so easy as a list. That things are far more involved. Things are far more difficult than just saying, okay, here's the list of yeses, here's the list of noes. Follow your list. Things are much more complex. They're much more difficult. There are other issues always involved. And I'm at the point where, when with marital problems and questions of divorce and remarriage, I think it's mostly an issue of your heart. There are plenty of people who have grounds, we might say, for divorce. Yet the worst thing about their marital situation is their wicked heart of wanting vindication, wanting revenge. And their own judgmental and hateful spirit is as bad as the wrong that has been done to them. Heart issue. It is hard to find yourself in a difficult marriage and maintain a Christ-like desire to be reconciled to someone who has hurt you deeply, repeatedly, over and over again until you are sick of it. So it's not so easy to make a list. I want you to just keep all these things in mind as we read the chapter. So here we are, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Let's begin with verse 1. Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, and come again, together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But this I say by way of concession, not of command. Yet I wish that all men were even as I myself am. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. But to the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not send his wife away. But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, let him not send her away. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband, and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Yet if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or the sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? How do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? Only as the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each, in this manner let him walk. And thus I direct in all the churches. Was any man called already circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Has anyone been called in uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. But what matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. Let each man remain in that condition in which he was called. Were you called while a slave? Do not worry about it. But if you are also able also to become free, rather do that. For he who was called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who was called while free is Christ's slave. You are bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. Brethren, let each man remain with God in that condition in which he was called. And beginning verse 25 will be our text for today. Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I think then that this is good in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you should marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none, and those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. For the form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that they may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is seemly, and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. But if any man thinks he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin daughter, if she should be of full age, and if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let her marry. But he who stands firm in his heart, being under no constraint, but has authority over his own will, and has decided this in his own heart, to keep his own virgin daughter, he will do well. So then both he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well. He who does not give her in marriage will do better. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my opinion, she is happier if she remains as she is. I think that I also have the Spirit of God. All right, let's go back to verse 36 just for a moment. If any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin daughter, how many of you are using a version that has the word daughter written in the text? Am I the only one? Okay, a few. All right, is that word daughter in italics? Okay, it is in mine. And that is a signification that that word was not in the Greek language, that it was placed there for clarity. The King James Version uses that technique. I'm reading out of the New American Standard this morning, and it uses that technique, at least it does in this chapter. All right, so the text actually says, but if any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin, if she should be of full age and must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let her marry. And then it goes on. And every time you see that word daughter, it's written in there. Now that, if that is the correct interpretation, then that's well and good. but maybe it's not. I believe that it is, but in doing some reading and studying, I came across a couple of views for these last four or five verses here that I had never heard before, and they are dependent upon this not being a daughter. The idea is that a man and woman, perhaps they're engaged. The person who was expounding this view kind of had two versions of it. One was a male and a female who are just living together, but they're Christian. And they have decided to live together in purity. And so they keep themselves pure, although they're living together. Now that's a bizarre predicament, it seems to me. Another one was that perhaps a man and a woman are married, but they decide to keep themselves away from one another sexually because they have this idea that it is more holy, and they are devoting themselves more to God. You can see that idea practiced in the Catholic Church even today. Now, I don't think that that's what this text is talking about. I think it is talking about a man who has an unmarried daughter. I think that the way that I read the text, the gist of it, is what he's saying. Now, we'll get to that later on in the course of the message. But here's our text. Now, I'm going to give you two or three points here, and they're going to be in pairs. I'm going to sort of give you two sides of the same coin for three different points. You see six things listed on your outline. They'll be paired as two. So here's the first pair that we're going to look at from these texts. The first one is this. Don't marry. This is Paul's advice. Don't marry if there is little or no hope of a healthy marriage. Don't marry if there's little or no hope of a healthy marriage. The second point is, if you wait for perfect circumstances, you will never marry. Okay, kind of two sides of the same issue. You see, the title I'm giving the message this morning is Finding the Perfect Marriage in an Imperfect World. We don't live in a perfect world. We are fallen. The person that you, if you're not married or if you are married, the person that you married is a fallen human being. They will fail you. They will disappoint you. They will sin. So will you. You will disappoint them. That's the kind of world that we live in. It's just us. But here, Paul indicates to them, he said, according to the present distress, it seems he's like he's saying it's better if you're not married. If you're single, it's better if you would stay single because of what? What's going on in the world. Because of the persecution that you are facing or that is obviously right around the corner. It's better not to be tied down. Now, I thought of this last night. I asked Susan about it, what she thought. And she gave me her opinion, and I know her opinion's always right, so there we go. In wartime, I was talking particularly, we're discussing World War II, I have had the idea from somewhere that here is the United States, and men and women are going to and fro about their job, and they're marrying and giving in marriage and all this kind of stuff, and they are going through their life, and suddenly the United States find themselves thrown into World War II. And here are young men, their early 20s, who are married, or perhaps they are not married. Perhaps they're engaged and they're planning on getting married. The young man and his fiance are in love and they know they're going to get married, and suddenly the war comes. The young man is drafted. He's fixing to go overseas. A lot of times, what happens? They get married, right? Am I wrong in thinking that? It seems like I've had the idea in my head that there were a lot of young men and women who hastily got married before the man had to go overseas to war. Is that the idea that y'all had in your head? Okay, I want to ask you this question. All of you who are sitting here and you're married, and you answer the question, don't team up with your husband or your wife to answer the question. Okay, you answer the question as if they weren't in the room. Might have to have wives close their eyes, right? We are here, and this is 1942. And two-thirds of you guys that are in here have been drafted. We're going to say all of us are in our early 20s. Okay? And all of us that are couples are not married. We're all want to be married. We all have our fiance or wife to be right here, and we're deeply in love, and we know we're going to get married. But I've got a draft notice in my back pocket. I've got to go. How many of you would say you're going to be making the decision between the two of you whether or not to get married before he goes to Europe? How many of you think that you would get married? Raise your hands up. Don't be ashamed. All right? Most everybody would think, yes, I'll get married. Now, here's my question. Why? Why would you get married? Now, I'm not wanting... There may be sexual reasons, but they're immature. We're not going to talk about those reasons, okay? Why would you get married? John? Because you're in love with that person. Michael? That may be your last opportunity to show them love. Why would you get married? For the woman, she wants to give him assurance. Is that what you're saying? That she will be there waiting. Does that make sense to everybody? Somebody else tell me. Why would you get married? I got another reason? Full of lust. That may come into play, but I really don't think that's the issue. I really don't think that's the issue. Life insurance. Now that may be the issue. Brian. Okay. All right, there's some... Okay. All right. For you women, as you think through making that decision, is there some part of you that would want to get married? Would part of the reason be to give assurance to your husband that you would be there? totally went blank. Tina. Or Tina said, would that be part of it? Okay. Commit. And you're wanting to your husband to rest assured that you're there, right? Okay, what about you men? It's like Brian said, Steve. I got. He also goes the other way. That's right. Okay. All right. This is something I thought about. Is that the husband and wife? They're fixing to be torn apart. Right. He's going to be gone, and there is a very good likelihood that he's not coming back. She's going to be a widow. Free to remarry, yes, but a widow. And their lives are fixing to separate, and they have lost control of themselves being husband and wife, at one, being together. And I think that there may be, all these subjects there are true, but I think there may be an additional sense of we are in this together. You go to Europe, you may be killed. We are married. The loss will be mine as well. We are in this together. Now, part of me wants to say that if the man is thinking of his wife to be his best interest, that perhaps he would not want to marry so that she would not be encumbered by this guy who may never come back. But nevertheless, there's these hard things to think about, these decisions that have to be made. And they're not made lightly, I would think. But you wonder, because war comes and all of a sudden, courthouse is filled with people who get marriage license, get married. And you know that what thought has been given to it has been given very recently, very quickly, maybe perhaps very deeply. All right, but Paul here in 1 Corinthians is in this situation where he reminds them of the present distress. He reminds them of the persecution that's coming, and he says, maybe it would be best, because of the situation that you're in, that you don't marry. Perhaps things can be such, the persecution can be strong enough that would be the case. But I want you to think just very briefly of lesser issues. Not many of us, when we got married, were facing the issues of persecution. We were not facing the issues of perhaps I'm not going to live. But there are other things that come into play in our lives and in our backgrounds that could give us, if we thought soberly, little reason to have hope that our marriage will last. And yet sometimes we just rush past all of those flags, all of those warning signs. We just blow past them when in reality we are so incompatible, things are so different that it's unlikely that our marriage will be healthy. Now let's look at the reverse side of this coin. Right? The reverse side is if you wait for perfect circumstances, you will never marry. All right? It's not going to be perfect. And for a person who is trying to remove all obstacles, you'll never get them removed. You may see two or three big obstacles that you worry about. Is this going to be an obstacle in our marriage? And you may get those obstacles resolved, and they're gone. And then what? The other three or four that weren't so big are now the biggest ones. So they look big. And there's all these things that will always be something. And part of being committed and being married is the idea that I love you enough that the risk is worth the effort. The risk of having to walk through the hard times, you're worth it. Right? I'm glad Susan didn't give a whole lot of thought to getting married before we got married. Because there was plenty of options. And if she had constantly been finding something for me to work on, something for me to fix, pretty soon I would have just been left in despair. I'm never going to be satisfied. Our vows say we love in the good times and the bad, right? There will be bad times. That's point number one. Now let's go to 3 and 4. All things in this world are held temporarily. It's one side. The other side is, number 4, undistracted devotion to the Lord is the perfect focus for all of us. Now we're going to look at some verses here that I'm tempted to say I don't have a clue what they mean. I'm not going to say that. You'll figure it out as I try to explain it, I guess. Look in verse 29. Paul's going to give several phrases. Verse 29, he says, "But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on," and he's going to start naming some things, "from now on, those who have wives should be as though they had none." What in the world is that? Doesn't mean every possible thing you can think that it could mean. I'm certain of that. "Those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. Those who buy as though they did not possess. And those who use the world as though they did not make full use of the world." 4 or 5 phrases here. What is he talking about? The time has come when you've got a wife, it's as if you did not have a wife. If you cry, it's as if you did not cry. If you rejoice, it's as if you did not rejoice. It says if you buy, it's like you didn't possess them. Okay? These phrases are prefaced and ended with another phrase. Now let's look at it again. Verse 29. "But I say this, I say, brethren," now what does it say? "The time has been shortened." That's the first phrase. The time has been shortened. And then he lists all these things. Then you get to the end of verse 31. "For the form of this world is passing away." I think whatever it is that these two phrases mean that surround all these phrases, they're the key. The time is shortened and the world is passing away. So all the things that's in the middle there are temporary things. And they are not to be a whole lot of stock and importance put on them. You hold these things temporarily. I have a wife. That relationship is temporary. Even if we never divorce, if we live the rest of our lives in perfect harmony, it is a temporary situation. Because our very lives are temporary. The things that we own, the victories that we have, the happy times that we have, the sad times that we have, are all temporary. They're all passing. We live in a shortened period of time. The world is passing away. point I'll leave you there with in number three is your life and my life is too short to spend it, to use it up on things that have little real value. Number four, the statement is, undistracted devotion to the Lord is the perfect focus for all of us. I was thinking about this. This is the statement there. Marriage, Paul tends to look at marriage as being a distraction. That you have to focus your attention on your spouse. And if you're not married, you can devote all your attention to the Lord. I understand his point. But I believe that for a husband and wife, who each of them as individuals, there is something, a drive in the deepest part of their soul that drives them and leads them to pursue God. That is not a distraction for their spouse who is like mine. Let me ask you this question. Assuming that you have a deep love for God. If you have a deep love for God, is that same love in your spouse a distraction to you? I don't. It's not to me. It is not. My wife's, the deeper her commitment is to Jesus Christ, the better I am. The more happy I am. The more joy that it brings. The less distracted I am from all the other things that come from a being. And let's look at number 5 and 6. In a perfect world, this is number 5. In a perfect world, a daughter could safely and confidently trust in her father to guide her to a perfect husband. Before you laugh, let's read that again. In a perfect world, a daughter could safely and confidently trust in her father to guide her to a perfect husband. Now let's read number 6. It's the flip side of that. In a perfect world, a father would have developed such a relationship with his daughter and with God that his daughter could have such trust in his judgment. Those statements are foreign to our way of thinking, aren't they? But let's read again, verse 36. But if any man, who's this man? He's a father, right? We're going to see that he's a father. If any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin daughter. And I'll put the word daughter in there. If she should be of full age, in other words, she's grown. And if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. I'm going to say some things that I don't want to have to clarify every statement I make as I say it. So just hang on and listen. Let him do as what he wishes about her marriage. It doesn't say let him do what she wishes. Does it? Now we might get around to saying that, but it doesn't say that. Let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let her marry. Who's deciding whether or not this virgin daughter is going to marry? In this verse, the father. Is that bizarre to us? pretty much, right? And some of you later said, I'm glad it's bizarre to us, right? Verse 37, but he who stands firm in his heart, being under no constraint, but has authority over his own will, has decided this in his own heart, to keep his own virgin daughter, he will do well. In other words, if he's decided to not let her marry, that's okay. If he's doing it of his own will, he's made the decision in a rational way, then he does okay. That's what it says. I didn't say we liked it. I didn't say we're not going to try to explain it all away, but that is what it says. Verse 38. So then both he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do better. Okay, so these verses place a huge task on a dad. Or at least they appear to. Now, let me give you just some thoughts. The problem is that we live in a world that is fallen. We live in a world that is imperfect. And there is not a father in existence who has a perfect relationship with his daughter. There are failings around us. But I'm just going to give you some thoughts. Number one, you men who have daughters, I've been told a thousand times by Susan and other relatives of mine that God knew what he's doing when he didn't give me any daughters. And I have always hastily agreed. But if a man has daughter, I believe that if this man will develop a good relationship with his daughter when she is young, so that she is free to talk to her dad about things, talk to her dad about boys, about potential boyfriends, about potential husbands, that if there is that kind of relationship and the daughter can look at her dad and know that above all, her dad loves God. Her dad loves God. And he is driven. He is a driven man to do what is right in the sight of God. There is a lot more chance that she will have confidence that when her dad does come to her and talks to her about this certain young man or whatever, she will be willing to listen. Because she will have the confidence that my dad is looking out for me. When Susan and I got married, we didn't give, looking back on it, we didn't give all the thought that I gave, put into being married. I could have had it probably 2 minutes. Wasn't a lot of thought that went in. Susan's dad, between Susan's dad and Susan's mom, and my dad and my mom, I think Susan would agree with this, that the most, of those four parents, the one that had the most commitment to right and wrong, the one that made decisions the most objectively, that probably had the most mature walk with God. I think we both agree. That'd be my thing. Whoever was second was a distant second. They all went to church. They all were good people. But there wasn't a lot of training that went into preparing me and Susan to be married. She didn't have a whole lot of training from her parents. I didn't have a whole lot of training from mine. But there's one thing about her dad. He did love her. They did have a good relationship. She wanted to please her dad. I think if her dad had made known his desires, and I assume, I don't think he had them, but if he had made known his desires that he was not pleased with her marrying me, I don't know what she would have done. I don't think she would have done. Even without training, I think there was that relationship between him and her. My dad, I didn't have a lot of training there about how to pick a wife, how to raise no right and wrong. But there's no doubt in my mind, no doubt in Susan's mind, that my dad approved of us getting married. Told me. Most people are not blessed. Could answer the question, if each one of you could answer the question, my parents approved of my marriage. Was I prepared and guided through my parents in the marriage process? The vast majority of you, I would imagine, would have to say. I wasn't prepared, I wasn't guided, there was no approval. The reason for that is because we live in an imperfect world. Fathers are failing to be a protector for their daughters. They have abdicated that responsibility to somebody. They are not putting forth the hard work that it takes to prepare their daughter. Your daughter does not need to look at you and view you as somebody who's going to find fault with every young man that she has interest in. Your daughter needs to see that you have been proactive you have been involved in guiding her and helping her to find the right husband. No matter what our situations may be, they will fall short of the mark. We might look at this text and we might say there's a cultural thing here that doesn't exist. I don't buy that. But the cultural thing there, perhaps there is. It's been there since creation. It is still there. Well, we finished these seven chapters. Next week, John takes us up to chapter 8, changing subject matter a little bit. So let's prepare for that. Pray with me. Lord, you know our needs. God, you know our failings. God, you know where we are so prone to not be toward our spouse what we ought to be. We want to live selfish lives. We want to be served rather than served. We want to put off the hard work it takes, the times of being a parent. Do it tomorrow, and before we know it, kids are grown. If they make it, if they love you, it perhaps will be in spite of our parents. God, would you give us the grace to love you? Grace to pursue you. Lord, a deep love and commitment that cannot be extinguished by laziness, by procrastination, by the influence of the world. God, may you guard and guide our children. God, I pray especially for the daughters that are here today. God, I pray that you would be gracious. God, that you would let them trust in you. To really trust in you. Lord, would you glorify yourselves through our lives, I pray.